Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 215 of Her, the podcast where you'll hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, what? Her video games and body issues, too? Good Lord. Yeah, there's an association. Go ahead, wipe the shock off your face. You know what I'm talking about. Put that little device down and stop playing that game. All right, now listen. Before we begin this really cool show, just know that it's made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. Here's your first official reminder out there to click onto iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show, because I sit here just waiting to hear from you. I'm not playing around here. I love your feedback. All right. You'll be hearing another reminder later on. All right. It's time for Her.
Her. The podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind. Her body. Her life. It's all about her.
Oh my goodness. Video games. Didn't someone just win $3 million for the Fortnite thing? Some 16-year-old. Oh my gosh. And then we have parents freaking out about video games. And then we have a new nuance to this. And that's all about, wait a minute. How does that affect women all the way down to their body issues? Well, we have with us Dr. Chris Ferguson. And Chris is the author of Moral Combat: Why the War on Violent Video Games is Wrong. He also has a new book coming out in January of 2020 called How Madness Shaped History. Yeah, I know. I could say a few things, but I'm not going to. Dr. Ferguson, Chris, is a professor of psychology at Stetson University and an internationally renowned expert in video game influences on behavior. Thank God for you is all I can say. He is a fellow of the American Psychological Association and is a licensed as a clinical psychologist. He lives in Orlando. And oh boy, Chris, have we got a show for you. Welcome to the Her podcast. Oh, we have a few things to say, just sort of, you know, kind of going to that place. You know, this whole issue, Chris, good Lord, new research findings by the APA's, you know, in their journal of popular media culture, you know, did not find that sexualization increased body dissatisfaction or aggression toward other women. Media influences from video games appear to be what? Minimal? All right, start explaining yourself.
Well, I think it actually kind of goes with, you know, some of the changes that we're experiencing in psychological research very broadly. So I don't know if you've come across, you know, some of the discussions about, you know, the idea that we're having a replication crisis in psychology. So, you know, there are lots of different ideas that, you know, going back 10, 15, 20 years ago that we were absolutely sure about in psychology. And, of course, media effects is one of these. So you'd hear a lot about, like, you know, violent media causing aggression, of course, the sexualization causing body dissatisfaction in women. You know, movie smoking causing smoking in teens, and, you know, basically everything you could think of. And what kind of started happening about 10 years ago is that, not just in this area, but across psychology, it turned out a lot of things we thought were absolutely true, is actually unreliable. That when you do newer, better, more rigorous, you know, more transparent studies, that we're actually not finding those effects anymore. So it seemed to be like a lot of psychological science was kind of like driven by narrative. You know, psychologists were kind of just finding what they wanted to find, and they had the flexibility in their methods to kind of do that. They just rerun their data multiple ways in order, until they got the results they wanted. So what's happening in more recently in video game research, in other areas of media research, and of course other areas of psychology and medicine as well, is that we're now seeing a trend towards doing more open research, more transparent, using more standardized methods, more rigorous methods. And with that, we're not finding the effects that we used to. And so this is just one area. I think probably more people probably heard that, for instance, like, you know, with violent video games and aggression or violent behavior, that we're no longer finding any associations there. That this week with the, you know, two shootings over the weekend and with the Trump administration talking about video games, there's been a lot of coverage of that. But it seems to be the same issue here that, you know, at least in this particular study, you know, when we had women play a game that had a more sexualized representation of a female character versus a less sexualized representation, there were no differences in the subsequently in the women's body dissatisfaction, or their aggression towards other women. So this is, you know, kind of gelling with a lot of other research more recently in media effects, suggesting that the impact of at least of fictional media appears to be much more minimal than we once thought.
What about effects on men? Is there any data about whether sexualized representations of women characters can really impact male players?
Yeah, I mean, actually, there's been probably more research on male players than on females. I think ours is one of the first, or not, maybe not the first, but one of the relatively small number of studies that looked at female players. You know, there are, you know, far more studies of men, and the outcome of those studies has been somewhat mixed. So, and somewhat controversial. So, for instance, there was a study that was released in 2016 with Italian teenagers that, on the surface, at least, they had some of the kids play Grand Theft Auto, which is more sexualized, and they had some other kids play, I don't remember what, it was a violent game, it might have been like Call of Duty, but, you know, a non-sexualized violent game. And then they had, you know, a third group just play non-violent game, non-sexualized. And initially, they found no differences between the groups. So, they, you know, it didn't look like directly that playing Grand Theft Auto had any impact on empathy. This was the outcome was empathy towards girls who had been assaulted. But they did this kind of like convoluted, like three-way, really, really messy kind of analysis to still make it look like maybe in an indirect way that video games were reducing empathy. And then a year or two later, myself and another psychologist reanalyzed the data. And one of the things we found out is they hadn't used random assignments in the experiment. So that all the 15-year-olds who were the youngest teenagers played Grand Theft Auto, and the older teenagers, you know, played the non-sexualized games. Well, you know, of course, empathy increases over age. So that was a really kind of glaring flaw in that study. And even when we kind of ignored that flaw and reanalyzed their data, we were not able to find that playing Grand Theft Auto increased, decreased empathy towards girls who had been assaulted. So you see a little bit of back and forth in some of that research. I would say on balance, you know, kind of looking at all the studies and acknowledging that there are certainly debates in that area, I think that on balance, we're not seeing evidence for strong effects, you know, because you hear these kind of narratives that like playing these games is going to cause like misogyny and sexism. We're just not really seeing the data again that, I mean, these are important issues about misogyny and sexism, but we're not really seeing the data that playing video games is a major contributor to those types of outcomes.
Huh. So you're blowing all my myths. You know, apparently these were supposed to be belief systems and they're flipping myths. So they're really, you know, seeing women in most of these video games in a bit of a sexualized way does not really have the impact we thought. So is that true then?
That does seem to be the, you know, the case. I mean, and of course, one thing I do want to emphasize is that this doesn't mean that we shouldn't be advocating for better representations of women in games. I mean, one of the things that did come out, you know, particularly about 5 years ago, was the acknowledgement that, you know, females are underrepresented in games in general, and where they do show up in games, they tend to be more sexualized, you know, probably on average than male characters. Male characters are sometimes sexualized too, but probably there's more sexualization of the female characters than the male characters. You know, and I've been an advocate for sort of improving that and seeing better representation, or at least more options to see better representation of female characters in games. And I think we have seen some improvement, you know, with a lot of games like The Last of Us and the, you know, Alice Madness Returns and Horizon Zero Dawn. There's been a lot of good games now that have had very strong female leads. So I think that's a positive. But I think the risk is that, you know, we can definitely keep advocating for that, you know, and using our wallets to reward video game companies for doing this. But I think that we do have to be cautious about, you know, sort of pegging this advocacy effort to public health. You know, I think that's sometimes where advocates, you know, get onto a thin branch a little bit. They say, we need to do this because it harms women. And then if you end up with studies that say that, well, maybe it doesn't harm women directly that much, then you kind of hurt your credibility. So I think it's better to say we ought to do this because it's the right thing to do. And you'll attract more women gamers, you know, who will be more excited about these games. And I think that's a better argument to, you know, to advocate towards the same goal.
All right. Now I'm going to go to the dark place. Oh, no. Okay. And that is that whole issue of, you're an expert on video gaming, so you know what I'm going to ask. And that is, you know, I'm aware of a lot of people who have an issue with video game addiction. Is this a real thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really nuanced question. I mean, it's not either yes or no. What we know is that some people definitely overdo games, you know, and that's probably about 1% or less of gamers. So it's not an epidemic. It's not a large number of individuals. And I think most people that study this, you know, acknowledge that this is not like, you know, every kid that plays Fortnite is, you know, out of control. But a small number of individuals do overdo games. Now, that's true for a lot of other activities as well, like shopping and exercise and work and sex and food. And, you know, so people, there actually are research papers on dance addiction, which really fascinates me as a concept. You know, so people overdo lots of stuff. So it doesn't look like games are necessarily unique in that sense. So they're not the same thing as cocaine or methamphetamines or things like that. So those kind of comparisons we can just, you know, discard as rubbish. But that doesn't mean this isn't, you know, a real issue. So a small number of people do it, and it seems to be in most cases the consequence of a pre-existing mental illness. So usually these people have depression or anxiety, in some cases an autism spectrum disorder, and they're typically using games as a coping skill, as a coping mechanism. And it may not be the best way to cope with these mental health issues, but they're retreating into a fantasy world that feels better because the real world kind of sucks, you know, as from their perspective, at very least. So the answer to this probably isn't simply like abstinence for video games or simply reducing video game time, but that has to be part of a larger, you know, clinical effort to examine the mental health of these individuals, treating the underlying condition. So on one hand, you know, just very recently, the World Health Organization created a gaming disorder diagnosis. I think that was probably a mistake. You know, they probably shouldn't have done that. But on the other hand, we don't want parents to ignore it if they feel like their kids are struggling to, you know, balance their gaming with other things they need to do in life. So the things to look for, you know, is the kid having trouble with school, with their homework, with their grades? Are they not getting enough sleep? Are they not getting enough exercise? Are they unhappy? You know, and those are things to be worried about. If it's summer vacation, they're playing 6 hours a day and everything else is fine, they're still getting a little bit of exercise and they seem happy, that's not a problem. You know, even if the parents would rather they do something else, that doesn't mean it's a clinically diagnosed, you know, syndrome. So it's sort of a real thing, if that's, you know, if that makes sense.
All right. It's sort of a real thing. Well, all right. So let's go to a different place, you expert of all, you know, things video games. And that is, should you limit your amount of time doing this? I mean, I would imagine that doing some video games is, you know, mentally engaging. It's good to always be mentally engaged and challenged. Is there some kind of a dose effect here?
There's no magic number. So it's not like, you know, we can tell people if you play 3 hours a day, you're fine. If you play 3 hours and 10 minutes, well, that's the end of your life as far as, you know, there's, you know, some people are going to do fine playing 6, 7, 8 hours a day, you know, as long as they can get their other needs met, you know, their work, you know, responsibilities are met, their school responsibilities are met, they're happy, their socialization is fine. Other people might struggle with much less, you know, it might be 2 or 3 hours and they're having difficulty concentrating on the other stuff that they need to do. So there, again, it's not like a magic number that we can tell people. And again, the general gist is that you want to make sure that your gaming is maintained in balance with the other responsibilities that you have to meet in life. You know, for an individual, if you feel like you're playing video games because you have to, you know, almost like it's becoming work for you because you need to keep up, then you might want to evaluate whether you're doing it, you know, for the right reason. And certainly if it seems to be interfering with your socialization, with your exercise, with your health, with your work or school, then that could be an indication that, you know, things are getting out of control. But yeah, there's not like a one size fits all recommendation that, you know, that we give to people. And the other wrinkle is, of course, is something, you know, what do you do with someone who wants to get involved in esports, you know? And of course, then the balance is going to be, you know, very different because they'll need to practice at video games for, you know, a crazy number of hours a day, just like anybody that's involved in the sport will need to practice. And that, again, it's probably a little bit trickier, you know, to balance or to give really kind of any kind of, you know, clear advice on. But for most people that are not esports athletes, you know, it's really going to be a matter of just making sure everything is held in a reasonable balance and that you're happy playing.
All right. What the hell is an esports athlete? I mean, I'm looking at the background of this 16-year-old, I think I'm somewhat obsessed with this whole thing that happened to him, who just won $3 million for doing the Fortnite thing. The amount of hours he spent daily doing this thing was, you know, on average, like about 8 hours a day. Talk to me. What is that what the sport is all about?
That is it. That's basically, you know, you're looking at a world-class esport athlete there. Yeah. And I want to be very upfront. I don't follow esports myself. So if we start getting a little bit too inside baseball on it, I won't have much to tell you, but, but yeah, certainly this is becoming a big thing though. You know, schools are opening up programs for esports and all of that. And it's starting to generate, you know, a fair amount of revenue. So you do have individuals who practice an absurd number of hours a day, just like, you know, the leading football, basketball, baseball athletes practice an absurd amount of hours a day to become the best, at some of these video games, whether it's Fortnite, League of Legends, you know, Counter-Strike, whatever else that they might be, you know, playing. And yeah, I mean, we're starting to see people bring home, you know, pots of money that are fairly significant. You know, there are audiences, for esports. So it's becoming a fairly well recognized, sporting, you know, profession with an increasing amount of money and an increasing amount of, you know, viewership. Like I said, it's not my particular bag of tea, but a lot of people are really into it. And the one thing that's kind of cool about it in a way, I actually think, is that it opens up sort of the sort of athletic superstardom for a group of kids who probably weren't going to be basketball players or football players, you know. So that's actually kind of cool in a way.
But is that code for, you know, geeks?
Yeah, maybe a little bit, you know. And of course,
come on, you know what I'm talking about. You know, so basically now we know where to park the geeks.
my own basketball career was cut pretty short, you know.
I know a lot of that going on. I mean, I think that that's funny when you think about it. I went to one of these super intellectual high school things. I think we were such a bunch of loser geeks that we didn't even have a football team, so we didn't even have a choice. And if there was a football team, it was probably laughable. But, you know, where do you put people like that? Well, I think that some of this is kind of cool stuff. So long as, you know, I always say as a physician, there's got to be a limit to almost everything. I mean, come on, you know, you could Netflix your day away if you want to, and that has nothing to do with the video. It's just that, you know, getting lost in stuff. And then, you know, you're a psychologist. You know, when should, and this is important, I was just confronted with this the other day from a family whose kid is spending like literally, you know, all day doing video games. And when should you see this as a mental health issue? When should you really reach out for help and support?
Yeah, those are great questions. And again, you know, of course, I face the same questions from parents and families, you know, myself. And again, it sort of depends upon the context. So simply playing all day in and of itself isn't necessarily a red flag, particularly if it's the summer, you know, when the kids don't really have a lot of else that's, you know, going on. So, I mean, I live in Florida, so it's like hard for the kids to go outside because it's like 130 degrees out, you know. So a lot of them will spend time inside socializing, you know, through video games or other electronic media. So the questions I typically ask of parents are, you know, is your kid, if it's particularly the school year, you know, is your kid doing okay in school? Are you noticing grades slip or the teachers concerned? You know, that's one thing. You know, is your kid getting enough sleep? This is a tricky one because the other thing with kids, particularly teens and their sleep, is that the school schedule itself is all thrown off. You know, kids naturally want to stay up late and then sleep late. But when school starts at like 7:30 a.m., that's already going to throw off their sleep-wake cycle. But in general, you want to make sure, is your kid getting, you know, fairly adequate sleep? Are they getting at least a little bit of exercise? You know, they don't have to, again, you know, sleep playing 3 hours of basketball a day, but are they getting a half hour to an hour of exercise time? And lastly, is your kid happy? You know, does your kid seem to be relatively well adjusted for the most part? So I come across probably the majority of parents who ask about, you know, sort of this issue of when do I start to worry? I tick to these questions to say, is your kids fine? You know, are they getting enough exercise? Are they going to sleep? Are they happy? And the parents will say, yes, 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 yes. And I say, okay, well, what's the problem? And they usually will come down to, well, I wish they were doing something else. And I just kind of say, well, Tom, you know, that's not really for you to decide. You know, this is what your kid likes to do. You got to live with it. For the parents who do say yes, or they do indicate that one of those things is a problem, and it usually ends up either being the sleep or the academics or the two that, you know, I kind of get the parents worrying a little bit more about. Usually it comes down to, in most cases, that the families can work together, you know, with the kid and set up a schedule around gaming or cell phones or any electronic use where, you know, to use a little inside baseball language, it's kind of like we want to reward low base rate behaviors with high base rate behaviors. So basically, put that in layman's terms, you want to get them doing what you want them to do first, but that might be homework, chores, or whatever, and then you reward that with a certain set amount of time right. of video gaming. And you can kind of go back and forth.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, excellent. And that clears up most cases. Yeah, and if that doesn't do it, then you're probably going to need to, you know, seek some professional assistance from a child or adolescent specialist.
All right. Now, in video gaming, are there more issues with males in terms of mental health issues and video gaming or females? Is there, in other words, I'm assuming, maybe mythologically, that there are more male gamers than female gamers. I think that's true. Tell me if I'm wrong. And if that's true, then are the females increasing in number? Are they, what's happening mm-hmm. with the genders on this?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So yeah, it depends on kind of how you define gamers. So if you look at like self-defined gamers, you definitely find more male than females, particularly if you're looking at like console gamers, you're playing at the Call of Duty, the Grand Theft Autos. Usually you get something like an 80-20 split, you know, male to female. If you look at gaming more broadly, so now you're looking at like your Candy Crushes and your Angry Birds and those kind of games, or World of Warcraft for that matter, or Skyrim, then you have the role-playing games or the games you can play on your cell phone, then you get a lot more female representation. And so they say like overall, women and girls make up about 40% of gamers, you know, but that's, you know, allowing for there to be, you know, a difference in the type of games and the way they play between boys and men and girls and women. But of like the hardcore gamers, you tend to find a bit more males who identify than females. So they do find about 20% of women or 20% of gamers are women and girls who really, really, really love to game a lot. And they play the same first person shooters and, you know, everything else that are thought of as being traditionally male. So with that, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, if you look at like game addiction, yeah, you do tend to find a bit of an overall overrepresentation of men and boys in game addiction. But again, if you then like sort of broaden that out and you look at like sort of like tech addiction in a more broad sense, then again the genders tend to even out. Again, it's not, we're talking about 1% in either case, you know, of men, 1% of women. Men and boys will tend to overdo the gaming consoles, girls and women will tend to more overdo the cell phones and social media. It all kind of evens out you know, in the end. But again, it's important to make sure that this is true for lots of other things like shopping and work and even exercise. People overdo all kinds of things.
Be careful about the shopping part. Be careful about the shopping part. I get very sensitive when you start bringing things like that up. You know, I just noticed. I was triggered.
I understand. we can talk about the dance addiction or whatever else that I
know, seriously.
But
oh my gosh. Well, you know, the way I'm looking at it is there's a very healthy side to this that's perfectly fine, a lot of fun and challenging, and it's a, you know, lot more fun than Sudoku, which you can only play so many times before you go out of your mind. I'm so tired of those damn numbers. But there's mm-hmm. also a dark side. So, you know, that's true of so many things in life. And, you know, with the work that you've done, this is helping, you know, lend some credibility to real facts out there, research-based facts about especially women and their representation in video gaming, because I think that we're assuming that that women are actually suffering more of a slam on their body in terms of body issues, body image issues, etc., than they're really getting. So that was really, really provocative research, and I congratulate you on a really good piece, which I think is incredibly helpful. Actually, the name of the piece was "Examining the Effects of Exposure to a Sexualized Female Video Game Protagonist on Women's Body Image." And again, surprisingly, it wasn't like, you know, huge that media influences from video games appear to be minimal, especially as it is influencing issues of body dissatisfaction or aggression toward other women. So really quite fascinating stuff. What I have to say to you is, you know, keep up the great work. And I just love the books coming up. Again, Dr. Chris Ferguson, who is the author of Moral Combat, Why the War on Violent Video Games is Wrong. And then the forthcoming book, How Madness Shaped History. And this is coming out January 2020. And guess who's back on the show to help us understand how madness shaped history? Could it be you? Tag you, Chris. You're back in January to help us understand all that. Cool?
I'd be glad to do it. It'd be a pleasure.
Awesome. And I hope all of you out there in Herb Podcast Land were listening up and taking notes, because this was really cool stuff. Chris, I want to thank you so very much for being on the Herb Podcast.
It was a pleasure. I had a great time.
Awesome. And everyone out there, here's your next official reminder to run on over to iTunes right now and rate and review the show, because this is cool stuff. That's right. Put down your device and your damn video game and just get on over to iTunes right now. Ha! I gotcha. Busted. I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Herb Podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every single episode of the Herb Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today. And hey, stay well.